encouragement it is to my heart to see this place full tonight. It's good to see all of you tonight. It really is. I want to explain a little bit about tonight's message. I changed it. Last week, I was planning on talking about perseverance tonight. I've been thinking about it for months. And perseverance was going to be tonight. But after last week, and after an awful lot of thought and meditation and prayer, I realized that there was something more important that I needed to discuss with you this evening that is a quality for success, but I had not originally intended to have it in this series. And now I realize, in reflection, in prayer, that it's probably one of the most important, if not the most, that we could discuss. And you'll understand as the evening goes on. So let me just say that you've got to have perseverance in order to succeed. But I'll do a teaching on that some of the time because it's vital. But I didn't think in reflection that it would be as vital nor as timely as what we talk about this evening. How many of you, you don't have to raise your hand, but I want to ask you this question. How many of you have ever driven down the highway with your emergency brake on? Yeah, I see that. We all have done that, haven't we? Or probably many of us. I remember shortly after I got my my van, 2 years ago, I got this Aerostar van. And it was the newest vehicle we'd ever had. And we were just so excited to be able to get a van to haul our family around, have a little bus to take people places. And I had a couple friends that I wish they wanted to see it, so I was giving them a ride. I'm driving down Cedar Avenue, and I'm a pretty fast driver. So I'm driving down the freeway, and this thing was chugging along. I mean, I just had it. This was the second day. And it was downshifting, and it's like, I'm thinking to myself, these pathetic Fords. I should have never bought a Ford. These, you know, and I was going on and on and on. In my mind, of course, it was someone else's fault. And I knew that. Happened all the way and all the way down. Really impressed my friends, I'll tell you. And I dropped them off and I felt totally humiliated. And I felt like I'd really gotten stuck with a lemon. And I was reaching down to get a box of Kleenex or a Kleenex out of the box. And I realized the emergency brake had been on all the way down the freeway, and I was trying to go, but it wouldn't go. Well, the light that's supposed to come on, you know, the idiot light, as it's known, you could call that the humbling light, especially calling it an idiot light, that wasn't working, and so I didn't realize, you see, I don't put the emergency brake on, but I had been on a hill and I had it on. So I thought, oh man, I probably ruined the car, so I took it off, and, you know, it's worked fine ever since. Basically, it's worked fine ever since. But imagine for a moment if you never knew that your emergency brake was on and you're driving down the freeway and everywhere you go and you're going through brake pads and you're going through gas and your transmission's always lugging down and you're spending money to maintain this thing. You think, what in the world is the matter with this thing? And you just, you wear it out, but you think that's the way it's supposed to be because you don't know any different. How many of you would like a friend to tell you? You think about that for a moment. How many would you like your friend to say, you know, please don't take this personal or anything, but you're driving with your emergency brake on. I am. I mean, it might humble the person. They might feel really dumb, and that's not the point of telling them now, is it? The point is to help save the car. The point is to help them get more out of their automobile. And that's the point of what I want to share with you this evening. I think many people today in our society, in fact, what I'm going to talk about with you about this evening, I think is the biggest obstacle that most people are facing today with regard to the success. And for many people, it's killing them. It's killing them. Let me just share with you a couple other little stories here before I spring this on you. I want to talk about football for a minute since we live in the football capital of the world. The finest team ever assembled on the gridiron. Well, we hope. We hope. Think in your mind for a moment. Don't answer these questions. Think in your mind. What is the goal of football? The goal, I'll tell you, the goal is not only to win, But to go to the Super Bowl is to do both. It's to win it all. To win it all. To be the champion of the world. That's the goal. Two, what is the most important thing that you need in order to accomplish that goal? You need a winning strategy. Unless you have a strategy that will work, you will fail no matter how good your players might be. It's got to be a strategy that works. Most football coaches simply build on the proven strategies of the past, and they add to them. The third thing that you need, the third and final most important element that you need, obviously besides the coach, the team, and money to pay them, okay, is implementation. You must obey the strategy. You must implement the plan. If you do not, and you do not execute it well and consistently carry it out, you simply won't ever reach your primary goal, and that is winning. Now, there are all kinds of things that we could talk about that help you win, etc., etc. Life is the same way. God's goal for you and I was that we would win in life, that we would win in eternity. When I say that, someone wrote me a letter last week, and by the way, I appreciate your letters, good or bad. I appreciate your letters, whether they're praise or whether they're critical. That's fine. I'll read them. And one particular person thought that I don't care about the poor, the downtrodden, and those who cannot care for themselves. I do. That when I'm talking about a winner, I'm not talking about the good looking, the attractive, the beautiful, the talented. I'm talking that God's intention was that every person would be able to have a successful life. I do not mean rich. I do not mean tons of everything they could ever want. A young lady called her home today with an encouraging verse from my wife out of the Phillips Version that says, "For Jesus said, don't you know that the quality of a man's life does not consist of the abundance of his possessions?" I believe that. I am not talking about the success that leads to an abundance of possessions. I am talking about the success that leads to an abundance of living, of real, meaningful living. So God's intent was that every person would be able to experience that. In order to experience that, you've got to have a winning strategy for life. A proven, absolute winning strategy for life. You cannot afford to test and experiment with your life. Because if you blow the experiment, if it's the wrong one, it could kill you. And then you lose the whole game. And third, when you discover that strategy, you must obey it. You must apply it to your life. You follow what I'm saying, okay? Now, let's just talk for a moment. Let's move mentally for a moment with me to the area of inventions. If we brought Henry Ford up here today with his Model T, he might show us his Model T, but there wouldn't be a whole lot of us that would be very impressed. Why? Because today the original idea is nothing compared to the new idea. If you put a Model T up here, other than the fact that the Model T in mint condition would be worth more, you wouldn't want to drive it, of course, but it'd be worth more. If you put it up here in a brand new Mercury Cougar, leather interior loaded, I know which one you'd choose. I'll tell you, I know which one I'd choose. I'd choose the one with the better technology, the better ideas. Let's talk about architecture for a moment. Supposedly, we started out living in caves. And then we went to sod homes, maybe. Holes in the ground. Log cabins, tents, teepees. Which would you rather have? Now, I know aesthetically what we'd all rather have. You all are like me, like to live in a log cabin. But if we really got right down to it, and it's 30 below out, we'd love to have a home with a heater where you just turn up the thermostat, the dishwasher, all the amenities. We've come a long way. There's been vast improvements when it comes to inventions, things. But let me ask you this. What vast improvements have we seen in the quality of society in the last 50 years? Where have we seen an improvement on God's original plan for moral character that leads to success than the original? We haven't. There is no improvement on what God gave us some thousands of years ago when He recorded them in the Bible. What I want to talk with you about tonight is moral character. I want you to think of four individuals tonight. One of them, I don't know their full name. Magic Johnson, Mike Tyson. I think the guy's name is Quinn, is his last name, the hockey player here in Bloomington. And Jimmy Swaggart. These four individuals, I want to talk with you about them briefly for a moment. Every one of these individuals were the top in their field. Now, the hockey player, I don't know if he was the top in his field. Don't crucify him for this, but I don't really care for hockey. I've always said I'd be honest with you. I realize I'm taking my life into my hands saying that, but it doesn't really excite me. Okay? So I don't know if he's tops in his field, but he's good and he gets paid to do it for a living. I think that's pretty good. The rest of these men were really the top in their field. But all four of these men, and particularly three of them, have been damaged irreparably because of their lack of moral principles. Now, you might say, no, Mark, the reason is because they got caught. Well, you know what the Bible tells us about that? It says your sin will find you out. One way or the other. You'll either answer to society or you'll answer to God. But one way or the other, He's going to get you. God's given us a plan for successful living. And we take this individual. By the way, I am not here in any way to pass judgment on these men. In fact, I believe they can go on. The Bible gives away, and I'm going to talk about this the last series to next week. Last part of my series will be the ultimate key to success. And there is a way to overcome those types of deficiencies, but only one. And we'll talk about that next week. But you take Irvin Johnson for a moment. He had all the vision in the world for his life, all the hard work in his life, all the discipline, all the perseverance that makes a champion. The one thing that he did not possess was great moral principles. Now, there may be reasons for that, and I'll give you that. And I'll talk about this tonight. I realize that all of society says what he was doing was okay. He recently said in an article, I think I've slept with 1,000 different women. Well, Chamberlain says he slept with 20,000. I don't know, Wilt. I think Wilt was exaggerating. I think he'd be dead by now if he had. But, you know, it's a tall tale when it comes to locker room time. But I don't think Magic Johnson was really realizing that, and here's my point, part of my point. The mistake that he made, friends, is costing him his life. Period. He's going to die. I'm not here to say he deserves it or to stand in judgment on it. I feel it's a great tragedy. And my heart goes out to him. But I want to share this with you. If this individual had had the moral character to say, I don't do that. I don't do what? Sleep with 1,000 women? No. I don't sleep with any women because immorality is wrong. He wouldn't have any problem at all. He'd be playing out a glorious career. The Lakers may still be world champions, or maybe this year. But he cannot. Because of a decision that was made over and over and over again. Mike Tyson. Probably will really never know because of this mistake. But he may well have been the most dominant, incredible heavyweight champion that we've ever had. We'll never know. We never got to fight Evander Holyfield. And Evander just lost. It changes pretty fast. But because this individual did not have the moral character to choose a different path, he's in prison today being accused of rape. Now, I want to tell you something about that. I don't know whether he did it or not. I'm not the judge and I'm not the jury. I didn't hear the evidence. And I'm not here to point a finger at that young woman and say what she did was wrong or right or she's after money. I don't know. All I know is that if he'd never taken her to the room, then he wouldn't be in prison. The same with the hockey player. If he never, you see, moral decisions start way before you end up in bed. If he had never lived by those principles to begin with, he simply wouldn't be facing those accusations now. There may be people who still lie about your character. But when you've had a track record of sterling character, it usually doesn't hold up in court. And you overcome the slander. That is, if it wasn't for the media. The media loves to spread gossip and slander. But when it actually goes to a court of law, there has to be some pretty hardcore evidence. And if they find that this individual has lied, this is the habit of their life. And that's why they bring in character witnesses. People you've worked with, your peers. If they attest to the quality of your character, then usually those charges are dropped. Jimmy Swaggart, whether you agree with all that he said or ever did, I think he had some good qualities to his life. I think he was well-intentioned. But this man could not control his moral impulses. And as a result, and especially, let me just talk about this for a moment. Now we're not talking about just the damage done to these men's lives, but we're talking about the damage inflicted upon thousands, and in some cases millions, of adoring fans. The betrayal. The betrayal that people feel. I can't trust anyone anymore. The other day I was in a restaurant. I had my newspaper, and I came across this article. The origins of adultery. Your cheating heart may be primordial. What that big educated word means is it may be inherited from your primitive ancestors, the animals. Are we genetically programmed to cheat on our mates, to divorce and remarry? You bet, says anthropologist Helen Fisher. Patterns for infidelity and serial marriages were laid down by our prehistoric ancestors, says the researcher of the American Museum of Natural History. We all have ingrained in us the leftovers of that ancient history, says Fisher, authors of Anatomy of Love. Question. Why do you say both sexes are bred for infidelity? Answer. Millions of years ago, the man who philandered, that means played around, could have more children. More of the genes were passed on to posterity, and because he had more young, more survived. His mate benefited from sexual variety, too. If she slipped into the bushes with another lover, he probably gave her extra benefits. More food, shelter, protection, enabling her young to survive disproportionately to those of other women. Plus, she had an extra insurance policy if her husband got killed, or if he had poor hunting skills or bad eyesight, and she had an extra child with someone else with better skills. She upped her ante in the mating game, got better genes for her offspring. We know that a great many people commit adultery, about 50%, in spite of all the taboos against it. Question. What evolutionary reasons are there for divorce? What is remarkable is that we bother to form pair bonds at all. 97% of mammals do not. About 4 million years ago, our ancestors were forced to the ground because the trees were disappearing. We stood up on two legs, and women had to begin carrying their babies in their arms. They needed mates to help rear them. But those early pair bonds lasted only long enough to raise a single child through infancy, about 4 years. After that, the child joined a multi-age playgroup. I'm not saying he was independent, but the mother-father pair bond was not critical to survival. Well, I'm not going to read the rest of the article. And I want to say about this woman, I'm not here to knock this woman. And I mean it. Some of you have accused me of being too harsh. And I'll give you credit. There have been times I have been. And I mean this. I apologize for that. There are some times my mouth gets the better of me publicly. And I mean that. I have made some statements. I'll be going, boom, I say some statement. And it shouldn't have been said. I do not mean in any way to cast a doubt on this woman's intentions. I believe she's probably one of the most well-intentioned women in the world. She's given her life to studying this. But I would like to read to you now what the Bible has to say about these issues. All right. First of all, you need to understand that animals do not have morals. You see, I hope you all know that, but I've never even been to college and I know that. I didn't even like biology, and I know that. Animals do not have morals because they don't have a moral conscience. Human beings do, and it's one of the main things that separates you from the animal kingdom. I'd like to read you a few passages from the Living Proverbs. First of all, says this: follow the steps of the godly and stay on the right path, for only good men and women enjoy life to the full. Evil men lose the good things they might have had, and they themselves shall be destroyed. I have a lot I want to read to you, so just bear with me. The man who knows right from wrong and has good judgment and common sense is happier than the man who is immensely rich. For such wisdom is far more valuable than precious jewels. Nothing else compares to it. Don't you think that of all the money magic has, he would give anything to get rid of his AIDS? If he would have only had this wisdom beforehand. A friend of mine told me the other night, he was on the Arsenio Hall show last night, and for one of the first times, I've heard this though before, but on the show he basically said this: I'm just going to be honest with you, what I feel today, the only safe sex is no sex. What I am trying to get out today, he said, basically in so many words, is to abstain. And then Arsenio Hall, which is one of the first times I've ever heard him say this as well, because I've heard him talk about condoms till you're blue in the face. He said this, and I need to be honest too. He said, there is no such thing as safe sex. It's safer sex. But if you want to stay alive today, then the best thing to do is save it for your marriage. Boy, somehow that old wisdom is slipping. You can clap in this church. That's okay. You can even give a standing ovation if you'd like, but all right. Let me read you a few more things here, all right? This is a verse I taught my children when they were very young. You'll find if you read the book of Proverbs yourself, some of this was Solomon's personal advice to his son. That's why he says, my son, so often. He says this: I would have you learn this great fact, that a life of doing right is the wisest life there is. If you live that kind of life, you'll not limp or stumble as you run. Carry out my instruction, don't forget them, for they will lead you to real living. That's God's intention. He wants real living for you. He doesn't want you to get a leg broken or permanently dislocated from a moral misjudgment. This is the number one thing that I deal with as pastors. We deal with today are the mistakes that people made in their moral lives, and it has devastated many of them. Now there is hope, and I'm going to talk about that next week. But God wants to spare you. Let me read to you Proverbs chapter 5. I'm going to read you the whole chapter, so bear with me. Listen to me, my son. I know what I'm saying. Listen. Watch yourself lest you be indiscreet and betray some vital information. For the lips of an adulteress are as sweet as honey, and smooth flattery is her stock in trade. Now, I want to make it very clear that this goes both ways. Solomon was not down on women, but he was talking to his sons. He knew his son would be attracted to women. At least that was the intention here, all right? So I don't want anyone to think, oh, yeah, we're down on women, because we're not. I've seen men just as guilty as this, and as well as women. And smooth flatteries are stock in trade, but afterwards only a bitter conscience is left to you, sharp as a double-edged sword. She leads you down the path to death and hell, for she does not know the path of life. She staggers down a crooked trail and doesn't even realize where it leads. Young men, listen to me and never forget what I'm about to say. Run from her, don't go near her house, lest you fall to her temptation and lose your honor and give the remainder of your life to the cruel and merciless, we call that palimony suits. Lest strangers obtain your wealth and you become a slave of foreigners. Lest afterwards you groan in anguish and in shame when syphilis consumes your body. That's what they had then. Today we have herpes. We have, thousands of venereal diseases. Some of them I can't even pronounce the names. And we have AIDS. And you say to yourself, oh my God, if only I had listened. If only I had not demanded my own way. Oh, why wouldn't I take advice? Why was I so stupid? For now I must face public disgrace. Drink from your own well, my son. Be faithful and true to your wife. Why should you beget children with women of the street? Why share your children with those outside your home? Let your manhood be a blessing. Rejoice in the wife of your youth. Let her charms and tender embrace satisfy you. Let her love alone fill you with delight. Why delight yourself with another woman, embracing what isn't yours? For God is closely watching you, and He weighs carefully everything you do. The foolish man is doomed by his own wrongdoing. They are ropes that catch him and hold him. He will die because he will not listen to the truth. He has let himself be led away into incredible folly. This is the Scriptures. This has been, it's in bookstores, it's in libraries. Maybe friends have tried to share with you over years this timeless advice that would be saving the lives of millions of people. People say, Mark, do you believe in sex education? You better believe I do right here. The Bible says it. Sex is a wonderful thing. It is an awesome thing. Some people think, you know, Christians, they have such yucky views on sex. I don't. I'll tell you, I try to obey this passage as much as I can. And you could ask my wife for verification on that. I go to this verse regularly. Let her charms and tender embrace satisfy you. You know what another version says? Let her breasts satisfy you continually. I remind my wife of that passage. And I read it every fifth day of the month when it's, you know, Proverbs 5. It's a wonderful thing. I thank God for it. But it's for a married individual with their partner. God created it to bless your life, to enrich your life. He didn't create it just, okay, fine, let's go. So we have a baby. And I've talked to individuals that have heard that in their religious background. That's all it's for. It's not for fun. It's not for pleasure. It's not for enjoyment. Just make kids. That's a byproduct. That's one of the reasons. But God gave it as a wonderful gift. But I'll tell you this, I do more counseling today with couples who were immoral before they got married, and it has left both of them, particularly the wife, often, I'm just generalizing, okay? I'm generalizing, often with a very tainted view of sex. And I know many couples who haven't even recovered to this day after being married 10 years. It's still a very difficult thing for them. I can attest to that personally, and I'll get into that a little more next week. It took years, almost 8 years into our marriage to overcome the things that were done by the moral choices we made, or should I say the immoral choices that we made before we knew Christ. And it's the truth. And we'll struggle with guilt, and we'll struggle with frustration. You'll struggle with trust. You ladies will start to feel used. This is one of the number one reasons today. Women feel used because they have been. They have been. And I know many women have told me, Mark, I don't even know how to get a husband. I mean, you know, you put out, that's what you're supposed to do, but then they're gone. And if you don't, they don't hang around. Well, let me tell both you men and women something today. Don't, period. Don't, period. And for those of you that are married, maintain a monogamous relationship. If you're having trouble, don't try an affair. Get help. Help is available. God can change that in your life. He can change your perspective on it. He can change your life about it. You young people, you know, studies show that 11, 12-year-old kids want this, are doing this. Among certain cultures in this society, 64% of the births are illegitimate. Among others, today it's 35. In 1960, it was 4% total. And I'm telling you, I've dealt with, I remember 2 years ago, I was at a conference, and I had a young woman come up to me after the teaching, and she came up to me in tears, sobbing. She'd known the Lord for some time, and she said, Mark, she said, I don't want to go on anymore in my life. I don't want to go on in my Christian life at all. And I said, well, would you like to talk about it? She said, I don't know if I can. I've never talked to anyone about it. I'm so ashamed. I said, well, why don't we, you know, go over to the hotel lobby, sit in the lobby and talk. In case you wonder why I do that, just a little addendum, I never meet with women alone for their reputation and for mine. I'm a human being. I don't know, I tried to put myself into a compromising, what could be a compromising situation. And so where there was lots of people around, we were sitting in the foyer of this motel. And it took her 45 minutes. And she sat there and cried and cried. And I tried to say, listen, I know I can help you if you'll just talk. And she tried to get out and she just started sobbing. And finally I said to her, I said, you know, why don't I make it easy for you? I'll bet I can tell you what's wrong. She said, okay. I said, you have herpes, don't you? And she just broke out crying. She said, how did you know? I could just tell by the way you were acting. She said, Mark, I am so ashamed. I've only been with two men in my whole life. She works in the pharmaceutical industry. She knows all the ins and outs about it. She said, Mark, I just, you know, I have so much guilt. I have so much frustration. So I share with the answer, and that's what we're going to talk about next week. But by the end of that conference, she was a different person. But I'll tell you, I pray, and we pray as a pastoral staff for you in this congregation, for you young men and women, for you old men and women, middle-aged men and women, that you will not make a mistake in your moral judgment that could cost you your life or your honor or your family. Recently, I read the story of a woman whose husband ran off with another. I want to tell you, that is a devastating thing. And she went and shot both of them. It cost them their life. There's a lot of ways it can cost you your life, people. It can cost you your physical life. It can cost you your emotional life. It can cost you your mental life. It can cost you your health. It can cost you your peace of heart. It can cost you your self-respect. God wants you to be successful. He longs for that. He longs for you to have a good, upright, righteous life. So do the right thing with your life. Do the righteous thing, and God will bless your life. He promises to do that. He promises to do that. I felt this was so important that I felt I should change this message to this tonight. I hope you'll take it. You'll think about it. You'll consider it. If you're being involved with someone right now and you're not married to them, I want to encourage you, stop it. Stop it. If you're involved with a married person and you're married, stop it. Get help. You could call any one of the four of us, Doug, Brent, Ken, or myself. We are not here. I want you to know this. Probably the thing that hurts me of all things that's ever been said to me is that I'm here to yell at you and judge you. And nothing could be further from the truth. We're here to help you. What we're not here, if we were here to win a popularity contest, I wouldn't even open my mouth about these things. I know they're not popular, but I also know they're killing our people. This stuff is killing our young people. It's killing our families. It's killing our couples. It's killing single people. Not just with the disease, but inside their life just being snuffed out. And I don't want to see that happen to you. God does not want to see that happen to you. If you need help, you call us. We'd be in confidence, and we will do our utmost to help you. If you're involved in a small group, call your small group leader. That's why they're there. Get help. Get help. Next week, please come back because I've got to finish this. We'll get up by the end of next week as we talk about the ultimate key to your success. It might surprise you, but if you grasp it, it will change the quality of your life. Let's pray. Lord, I thank you so much that as you told us, Jesus, you came that we might have life and that we might have it abundantly. You came, Lord, that we might know real living, that we might know real joy in our life. You didn't come to ruin our lives. You don't give us your word to destroy our joy, rather to establish it, to give it to us in a way that we've never imagined it could be. God, I just pray tonight that you would take this message and get it home to this generation of men and women that are, I think, confused and hurting and in pain. And we are destroying ourselves as a nation. by our moral deficiencies. Thank you for each person here tonight. Bless their life, Lord. Touch them. Change them. In Jesus' name.